This is Main Street Weekend on Prairie Public. I'm Ashley Thornburg. Still to come on the show, we go aerial dancing, but we are going to start today with the backdrop behind a Christmas concert favorite, the Concordia Christmas Concert. Performances are a big part of the holiday season, especially after a COVID pause. And they are nice and multi-sensory. There's sight and sound and feeling and so much more. Paul Johnson is the longtime muralist whose backdrop sets the stage for the Concordia Christmas Concert. This year's performances are December 3rd, 4th, and 5th. And the theme is, "And Glory Shone Around." The theme is picked by the conductor, Dr. Michael Colleton, and I spoke with Johnson about how the Christmas concert is very much a team effort and how long it takes to get this mural completed.
Many, many hours, because you have to find a central, he gives you the theme, but you've got to try to tie it all together. So it's, in essence, the same story, but trying to change it every year, which is not an easy thing to do on finding. This is my 13th year, and I'm going, well, wait a minute, I've done that already.
Right. What more is there story of the birth of Christ?
Right,
like,
exactly.
What have we not covered yet?
Exactly. So it's always trying to find different angles, different, and it might be Mary, it might be emphasis on this, or in this case, Michael said, tons of angels. We need tons of angels. Or angels all over the place is what he said. And that helps define that. But then you're reading all the material and highlighting, so I do a lot of cross-referencing. I use a thesaurus. Mm-hmm. It helps me a lot to certain things that I'm highlighting. And then it's drawn, and then once they, usually by towards the end of, middle to end of July, I'm sending scans of my drawing to them. And they'll make some suggestions, flip this, do that, no, I don't like this, make some adjustments, and then when I get there, okay, then I trace it, scan it, and then I trace it in Adobe Illustrator. And so that's what you'll see on the screen.
Yeah, I looked at your screen, and I mean this with no offense at all, but it looks like one of those ending shots in a crime thriller where they finally have found who the serial killer is, because there's scraps everywhere, and then there's, you know, lines drawn to here, and we connect this, and then that, and then there's this, and then there's some color,
it's a vector program. So the reason why I work in Illustrator is it's vector-based. It's not a raster file, so I'm not working with the pixels you would in Photoshop, for instance. Mm. It's all mathematical vectors or little segments, and so I can transform it. I can go from a really small file, I think it's only 10 or 13 inches long, and then I'll enlarge it to 296 feet. So everything's proportional. So a pike equals a foot, for instance. Then I don't have to, take out terabytes of space to do it in Photoshop. So it's all vector based, and I've been teaching Illustrator at the college where I teach this is my 20th year, so I guess for 20 years I've been teaching the software, and I've probably worked on it professionally that time and another 10 years before that. So every year it challenges. I mean, you want to do certain things, and you're trying to find new ways of doing it.
The process of, I mean, I'm thinking when you can look at a paint sample on a 2x2-inch square and it looks great, and then you paint your wall and you're like, this is way too much color.
Right.
So how do you go through this process of knowing something that looks good at less than an inch big is going to look great at a foot?
Well, I tell you, it's a dynamic, changing thing, but I've said this many times and I'm not exaggerating. When I started, I start with prayer. I really do. Mm. And when it's done, I look back on it and go, I have no idea how that happened. I really don't.
You're the vessel.
Because I really, there's so many pieces that have to fit and have to work in it. And but some of the things, I'll look at just color principles, complements. If I've got a yellow, I'm going to look at a purple to complement it. So I'm using some really basic color foundational principles, triads, and I'm looking at color that way, and I like to spread it around so it's not all blue or all purple. Mm-hmm. There's a nice mixture because Brian Duncan can make any color change by his lights. So whatever I put up there, he can change. And so I know whatever I do, he's going to manipulate to the nth degree. And so that's pretty spectacular. And that's what really makes this mural unique versus painted, isn't that it's a it's an RGB file, so it's like printing something off your laser printer. And in essence, it is. It's just a 4 foot by how many feet you need.
laser. Yeah, you know, the
huge. Yeah, so it's huge, and it's wall output on wallpaper.
How long does it take just to print?
I'm sure up to 3 weeks and maybe four if they take their time, you know. But they're printing pretty close to around the clock. So.
Wow.
So it's going through, and then they check it, adjust it. We go through many proofs to make sure it's correct. So, yeah, it's kind of a monster. I love doing it. It's a real passion of mine. I hope every year I hope that we're able to do it again. But it is certainly a worry from the day I hand it to the vendor, and that's Short Printer in West Fargo. And they have the printers that are able to do this. And I hand it to them, and by the time I get it up on and all the contractors here build this thing, I'm like a expectant father, you know. I'm just nervous as can be. Because if things don't line up, and we've had some real...
Yeah.
You know, surprises over the years
doing
something
what?
Like this. Well, if there's so many technical things, maybe a plotter or something went wrong halfway through, and so all the lines are missing or something. And then, but they're really phenomenal about checking it. I think they check every foot of it while it's coming out.
Okay.
So.
You've never had, like, Jesus come out with dreadlocks or something?
No, nothing like that. If he's in dreadlocks, I put him there. but it's kind of a stressful time for sure because anything could go wrong, and, you know, everything builds towards that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the choir and lighting and the stage and the Brian's waiting for it. It's just a domino effect. So everything's got to work together, and if it goes haywire on us, we only have so many hours to fix it.
Yeah.
So we have Wednesday, the day before Thanksgiving, is a fluff day. I think people are working around here, but if I needed to, I could use that day if there was something that went wrong. I've been known to take these big ladders that are, I mean, some of these panels are, you know, they're 24 feet high.
Yeah.
And if there's something off, you know, my wife doesn't like to hear this, but I'll take a ladder and I'll prop it up there, and I'm up there taking a little can of spray adhesive and adjusting the lines, so make sure everything crosses over.
Do you have
the
good
panels.
Health insurance?
Right. I don't think Concordia likes it when I'm doing that, but I try to sneak in. And,
you're not getting hazard pay here.
No. Try to do that, but anyway.
Well, and then this is the backdrop for the concert, but also this ends up on mugs, and this is like this is a thing people collect.
Yeah, I don't know why they do that, but they do. I thought my mother was the only one that collected stuff like that. But and that's kind of why David Hetland, God bless him, he did it for I don't know how many years, 20 plus years. He did it all paint by number, and so he would draw it like this, and then they had a much smaller or somewhat smaller mural, and then he would paint by number. He'd go in and draw it on these big sheets of muslin, and then they would go in and paint. So he would have lots of volunteers that would come in, but he would paint pretty much right up to the day. I'm not quite sure. They worked around the clock. The man worked tireless. And then I came along when he passed away, and they looking for a new muralist. I said, I can't do it like David did. I don't have the time. I teach full-time in Alexandria. There's no way I can do this and to devote that kind of time that David did.
It's an hour and a half drive just to come
and I'm,
here.
Yeah, and I've commuted for 20 years to Alexandria from Pelican Rapids, so I mean, I've done this. But and it's just one of those things where I can't do this. And I said, why don't you go digital? Because what's great about it is we can get the file done. You can use it for all kinds of promotional we didn't know at the time what kind of lighting would change versus just traditional paint because it's RGB files. It's like looking at your monitor when they throw the lights on. So the colors are most magnificent colors I've ever seen when he puts lights on it. It's just unreal. And I don't believe Dave was able to get those kind of levels because it was paint. And this is just a different, and the gradients, Dave was never able to do gradients. And I learned so much from him, and that's still in each mural, you know, the technique, the outline, and so forth.
Well, you get kind of the analog and digital, like the best of both worlds coming together, it sounds like.
And I know that he was just starting to look digitally before he passed away. He was just blown away with what it could do.
Yeah.
And who knows what would have happened. I can't believe he would have ever stopped doing it. It was just part of who he was as a liturgical artist, and I'm sure he'd still be doing it. I'm sure he would do it up until his last breath, and that's basically what he did.
What's a liturgical artist?
Well, I that's something I really would like to do. When I'm done teaching, I would just like to dedicate the rest of my life to murals and stained glass and brands for churches and signs and banners, you name it.
Yeah.
Pretty much
there's a long history in that. This goes back to a time before people could read. They were telling the story of Christianity through
the
stained glass windows.
When I was a little boy and I went to church with my parents in Pelican Rapids, and I remember sitting in the pew, and of course you always took the pencil that was there and you wrote on the... And I would just kind of listen to the stories, and I'd just do little drawings, even as a little boy. And I always felt that closeness to God in church and art as a visual representation of what's being spoken. And, of course, across the world, you know, go to Notre Dame or whatever, you're going to see incredible art to complement the mission. And so I'd like to, what I call a liturgical artist, I don't know if there's such a noun, but that's what I'd like to do. And in essence, that's what I am, because the field house turns into a big church for just a few days, but it's a massive holy place. And then it goes back to basketball.
Which we also worship in this country.
Yeah, right, exactly. Exactly. So,
well, I'm just curious. You spend months, you spend your emotional, physical, spiritual energy pouring into this, from drawing it and meetings and refining and taking it to the digital space, and then printing it and then adhering it to wallpaper and putting it onto these big structural panels that can support it. And then, like you said, it goes up for 3 days.
And then put it down. It's torn down. It's torn down. So everything is thrown away.
Is that kind of like the concept of sand art, where it's meant to be appreciated in the time?
Well, our very first couple murals, when I presented this to Concordia, we thought we could just staple these, and that I would redesign each segment, each five-panel segment, into individual things, and they could sell them or give them to local churches, and indeed we did. The problem was is that we had all these lights to start with. It was our first year on television, and we had twice the lights. So the next year we did it, and it was a disaster because all the panels would sag. We tried duct tape. We tried staples. We tried it all, and we finally said we only have one other option, and that's wallpaper. And so there went sharing the file.
Gotcha.
Concordia has the rights. They can share the digital files with anyone if they want. But my thought was to share these actual panels, and this church gets this 8, or this church gets this 10, or whatever, and now that's that we haven't been able to do because we need to light it. So now Brian, I think what he said, he could only light it up to 30% when we were stapling it. Now he can get it up to 100% lit, and so the colors are just, I remember he was just astounded when we were finally wallpapering. He said, "You can't believe we've reached this point."
Yeah.
So it's a unique thing. I don't think there's a lot of churches or schools or anything around the nation that are doing something this big.
And have been for 95 years now.
Yeah, well, they've never, you know, David, you know, I think the mural kept growing, but it's as big as it's, you know, we've got literally inches to spare from one end of the field house to the other.
So what's it feel like in your soul when you finally get to gaze upon the finished
Well,
product?
I guess it's like, you know, as an artist, for me anyway, you know, I'm an illustrator, graphic designer, to be able to look at something that you've created and see other people enjoying it. Because quite honestly, I'm sick of it. At that point, I mean, I look at it and I just go, oh, man, I wish I'd have changed that. I wish I'd have done this. So,
yeah, the bane of the creative.
Yeah, right. And you just and parts of it, you go, oh, yeah, that turned out. Well, I wish I'd have. I don't ever want to see that again. And because you're just tired of working on it. I think every professional, you've worked on a story for so long, and you're just like, I just want it to be done. Mm-hmm. And you get to that point.
Perfection is the enemy of
done,
right?
Absolutely. I know we're on radio, but, you know, I was joking. I had a lot of hair before I started doing this, and now, you know, an eighth of an inch. So.
After just 13 short years.
Yeah, no. Just call that working in the creative field, period. But, no, it's a pleasure and a joy to do it, and I think, as an artist, you see this and you go, that isn't me that did that. It really isn't. People say, how do you do that? And I go, anybody could do this. You just pray to start with, and you've got faith in that it's going to turn out and it's going to be there.
Well, that's so. The part that's hard, the leaping.
Oh, yeah. Leaping is right. Because I'm kind of on my seat's edge because we have to inspect and wallpapering, and you just don't know what you're going to get. So it's one of those scary things. So I'm hoping by, you know, this time tomorrow will be the end will be in sight. So down to our last few panels.
How do you hope people will sort of walk through the mural with their eyes?
Well, there's a lot of things in there, and that this is probably the most complex mural I've ever done. I would say 95% of it is covered in imagery. It's just insane for me. And I realized that after I started doing it. I'm going, why did I do this? This is just nuts. M.C. Escher really inspires me, what this man was able to do. And on the left side, you'll see more of that, where objects will fit into other objects. So there's a lot of solid imagery based on Michael's, you know, what he wants in this is his concert. And then it just evolves. And every inch is really filled. And every year I go, what do you want to do differently this year? And they really like the stained glass, so it's always trying to make it look more stained glass, more. So I spend a lot of time just sitting in churches with stained glass and inspecting and measuring and seeing, okay, how did they do this, and try to make it look like that in a digital setting. So, but people, it's church, and I just hope they'll come back and they'll feel the, you know, the spirit of Christmas, and we're supposed to have it in our hearts all year round, and so hopefully this will inspire people to keep that, I guess. It's easier said than done, but I'm one of those few people that get to work on Christmas stuff for quite a few months. It is a real honor to be able to be Concordia's muralist each year, and I hope I can do it up until my last breath. So.
Paul, thank you so much for your time today.
It was a pleasure. It really was, and I encourage everybody to get out and enjoy Christmas again.
That was muralist Paul Johnson about the Concordia Christmas backdrop. Performances this year are December 3rd, 4th, and 5th, and tickets are available at Concordia College's website. Tom Ezern is next.
When you hear arts programming here on Prairie Public, know that it is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, and we thank them.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Ashley Thornburg, and it is time to get in the holiday spirit for the Magical Medora Christmas Tour. I have two guests joining me, Bill Sorensen and Amber Lee Rosen. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having us. It's great to be here.
Yeah, ditto.
I literally just flew in to the Bismarck Airport right now, and Bill picked me up and was like, we're going to the radio station. So here we are. This
and we're doing awesome. An interview, and you're going to – also, by the way, you're going to be in this show, right?
Oh, it's perfect. I'm so happy.
There's going to be more than 30 shows in more than 20 communities across North and South Dakota, Minnesota, and even a little bit into Montana. So let's just start with keeping up the energy of performing on a schedule like that.
Well, it's tougher for me, the old guy, but as you if you probably can already tell, Amber Lee brings a lot of energy, and so does Chad Willow, our music director. There's a lot of energy that comes from these people, but we feed off. It's been unbelievably well received the years we've been doing this tour, and so we are very fortunate that we get a lot of energy from the crowd.
Yes, the crowd is incredible, and it's just an amazing amount of support that's coming from everyone and the cast and crew and everyone. It's just a great team of people.
You can find all the tour dates and purchase tickets at Medora.com. And I'm curious from both of you here, and we can start with Amber Lee, as we talk about this time of year that can be deeply spiritual and moving, but then also it's festive and it's fun and it's light, and you have to go back and forth between songs that capture both of those emotions and probably a whole lot of other ones in between. How do you go through a performance like that?
Yeah, definitely. I think that this show is written really well in the sense that there's different sections of the show. So there's a part of the show that's very spiritual. And then there's, you know, some parts that make you laugh and you're just having a silly time. And then there's other parts that are, you know, we throw in the country twang. And then there's other parts that were pretty... We bluegrass it up a bit, and then there's other parts that were very, you know, more on the classical spectrum of things. So we give a little of everything, and we definitely keep the Christmas spiritual side in there as well, because that is a very important part of it.
Bill, as the more veteran performer.
That's a very kind way of saying that.
Just curious, your thoughts on going up and down, being with the crowd energy and keeping this up throughout the years even.
Yeah, well, you know, and what you just said is we try to do both those things in the show. We try to have a lot of fun and bring a lot of joy in the show. But we also recognize that it's a special time of year, and so we do have a great spiritual component to our show. So people can be aware of that. And our cast is just amazing this year. So that's where we get a lot of this energy. There's a young guy. In fact, Amber Lee hasn't had a chance to meet him yet. A young guy by the name of Jacoby is actually from Minot, North Dakota, that's part of our cast. And he's going to be big time. I'll tell you right now.
Aww.
I'll tell you right now. I'm going to write it down. In fact, he auditioned for three other shows after he did the Medora musical this summer and got all three. And he's done with our Christmas tour, he's the lead, the non-costume character on Sesame Street Live that tours big arenas all over the country.
Fun.
Yeah. Very cool.
My gosh.
Very cool. Yeah. And so we've got a very talented cast of people that help us bring that energy and bring that spirit.
Well, Amber Lee, let's talk about being on the road with a crew. You are performing with these people, but then you also sort of have to live with them. during this time period. And obviously, it's not necessarily people that you grow up with, but the camaraderie and the challenges of being on a high energy, very busy tour.
Yeah, you just have to make sure to listen to yourself, and you know, when you need to take a little time to just breathe, you do it, you know, and then also being a team player is just so important, you know, enjoying the other people that you're with and then taking time for yourself if you need that kind of thing. So, it's really I love touring, but I will say, you know, it can be pretty tough on the body. So, you just have to have that balance.
Yeah. I want to have our listeners experience a little bit of what you are bringing to the performance, Amber Lee, because you have a particular instrument. Set us up with what you love about your fiddle and then what you're going to play for us.
All right. Well, I just – I pretty much love everything about my fiddle, violin, whatever you want to call it. It currently has strings on it, but soon after it'll have some strings. So I'm going to start with something a little bit more spiritual, classical, and then I'm going to go into a little fiddle ditty.
Okay.
So here we go.
In just a couple of minutes, you brought us to two very different places.
Indeed. Yeah, so I started with some Oh Holy Night, and then I went into Orange Blossom Special.
And she did that. I said 2 minutes ago as we were walking in here, I said, why don't you bring your violin with you? Maybe we'll play some. So she
oh, she's one of those.
She's one of those people that she can do anything at the drop of a hat. So.
It's very, very fun. And so you'll hear both of those songs.
Yeah.
I think I heard a little foot stomping, right as that second song kicked in, too.
I was stomping pretty hard, and I realized, you know what? This is radio. I better stop stomping so hard.
No, it's great. That's what people go to live performances for.
Yeah.
Speaking of live performances, Bill Medora, the energy of being on stage and doing this year in and year out and something that you love and you and the audience feed off one another, and then you throw in something like a pandemic.
Yeah. Whatever our new normal is, right?
Yeah.
You know, we didn't get to tour last year. We did our show in Medora, and it just was not the same.
Mm.
You know, just not the same. So we're so thankful and grateful that we get to go out on the road again. And I think people are anxious to safely be gathering again. And so, I guess we'll all are cautious, but we're all ready to celebrate.
Hmm. We're visiting today with Bill Sorensen and Amberlee Rosen of the Magical Medora Christmas Tour. They are coming to a town near you. You can find the whole tour and get tickets at medora.com. Amberlee, when did you first pick up the fiddle? And what is the difference between a fiddle and a violin anyway?
All right. So, I first started playing violin when I was 3.5 years old. And that was actually when I was living in Mendocino, California. And then I continued my studies when I was 4 when we moved to Oregon, Eugene, Oregon. And I was inspired because my older sister just out of nowhere decided that she wanted to play. Mm. And I have a great older sister, and I always loved what she loved and wanted to do what she did. So and now we both play professionally. I'm more on the fiddle side and she's more on the classical side. But The difference between a violin and a fiddle is, as I said before, a violin has strings and a fiddle has strings, but really, there's no difference. It's just the way you play it.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you're playing a fast fiddle tune and you add this thing called vibrato to it, which is when you are kind of pulsating your hand, your violin hand back and forth, you don't get a fiddly sound. And same with like classical music. If you slide into things like in a fiddly way, it just doesn't sound classical. So like, sorry, I put down my fiddle, but let me give you a little clue. So here's Turkey in the Straw. Now classical.
It hardly seems like the same song.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's, you know, and then you can make it sound really kind of sad. And all I did was make it minor. Wow. You know, so like you just, I mean, it's amazing what you can do with music. So really, it's just the way you play it. You know,
yeah.
I added some vibrato when I was doing the classical stuff, and I take it away when I'm doing the fiddle stuff.
Do you feel like you understand a song differently if you're playing it in that sort of classical or with the vibrato or making it sad?
You know, I think it's just a different interpretation.
Hmm. Bill, how does a performance like this change depending on the venue? You know, sometimes you're on college campuses, sometimes you're in a small community theater, sometimes you're in auditoriums.
Yeah, you wouldn't believe the difference that we have between, you know, huge auditoriums at Sioux Falls and the Chester Fritz and Grand Forks and to a couple school gymnasiums, other places. It's so fun to do. We always do some small towns, though. And it is so much fun to do those. I tell a lot of stories about going to Henning, Minnesota, which was one of our favorite stops, and how enjoyable that has been. But you know, it's hard to even make the set fit in some places.
I feel like they, you know, when you go to those small towns, they're just so appreciative, like because you've come close to, you know, it's just a small town. But the big crowds are really, really appreciative too. You know, the bigger towns are too.
Yeah.
It's just, I love that audience rapport between the performers and the audience. It's just a really lovely kind of friendship, you know.
The Magical Medora Christmas Tour goes across more than 20 communities, putting on 31 shows until Thursday, December 23rd. You can get your tickets and find out the tour schedule at medora.com. Amber Lee Rosen and Bill Sorensen, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks so much
for having us. Yeah, it was great.
It was a lot of fun.
Would you describe yourself as a rebel?
Rebels are not troublemakers, they're people who break rules that should be broken.
How to activate your inner rebel, no leather jacket required. This week on Hidden Brain from NPR.
Monday at 8 Central, 7 Mountain.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Ashley Thornburg. Dancing is hard. You have to be strong, flexible, and graceful all at the same time. Now, add to that being suspended 20 feet in the air. At the recent Chris Kindle Market, I caught up with Yvette Reyes, the owner and studio director of FM Aerial and Movement Arts.
What is FM Aerial and Movement Arts?
Oh my goodness, it has grown so much. What is it now? Okay, so FM Aerial, we teach aerial arts classes. They are silks and lyra currently. We are hoping to add extra like classes in the future, but that's kind of what our teachers specialize right now. And the movement arts, we teach pole dance, twerk classes, and also just a variety of like what people are like, we want to use a space. I'm like, yeah, use our space. Like if we don't have a class going on, I want to see what you come up with.
So aerial arts, for anyone who doesn't know, this means
up in the air, like the word aerial does. And silks, you're talking, these are those long strands of fabric that dancers mm-hmm. are twirling themselves up in and dancing 20 feet high in the sky?
Yes, yes. Tonight we just danced 20 feet in the air. In Fargo, silks are commonly referred to as the ribbon dancing or the curtain dancing, I've heard from a lot of people.
Is that specific to Fargo?
I think it's because I live in Fargo that it's like I ask people and they're like, oh, is it the curtains? And I'm like, this would be a very long conversation, so yes.
Okay. They kind of look like curtains. I can see that.
Much stronger. Much stronger.
Okay, good to know. Yes. Good to know. Yeah, what do you need to consider with this fabric here? Because I imagine you can't just do this on wool.
Yes, no.
That would be terrible.
Yes, or in the basement of your house. Yes. You'd be surprised. There are quite a few people that are very excited, and this makes a lot of sense because it is a very, like, unique art form, mm-hmm. And it is really great for just general, like, keeping your body limber. But at the same time, there are a lot of considerations with aerial arts that I feel like people don't know about because the information wasn't very readily available. Silks and aerial is still a very new art form, so maybe within like the past 100 years that it's been around. So when considering like doing silks, it's very much like what are you rigging to? Like what is the structure that you are attaching yourself to? Can it take the force of a human being that is doing dynamic movements? Our body can create up to 3 times like our body weight by doing simple movements. So that's something of like can it holds like 2,000 pounds worth of force, basically. It is not like 300 pounds. It is like in the thousands.
Wow.
Yes. And often like your homeowner's insurance will void your insurance as well if you do have any kind of like this thing in your basement too. So please be careful. Please don't do it in your home. Take classes. Like they're available now. And we would love to teach people.
Did you grow up a dancer?
I guess, maybe. Like, I grew up dancing in my room with a mirror.
Oh, okay. Like, solid.
Sure. So, like, YouTube, homecoming dance moves, the top 10, where you're just wiggling around. Like, that's kind of my education in dance.
Okay. Well, is that the right term to use? Are you a dancer? Are you a yogi? Are you an athlete? Are you something totally different?
I would say, so kind of a myriad of different things. I'm definitely a dancer. I enjoy dancing. Mm-hmm. Dancing brings me a lot of joy. But I'm also so many different wings, I suppose. I feel like human beings are very fluid. And so you can be like a yogi 1 year and then the next year be like, I haven't done yoga in like 6 months. So do I still consider myself a yogi?
Well, being fluid seems like a handy sort of personality, mindset, what have you, to doing something like this. What are the other skill sets that you need to have to be able to tie yourself up loosely, because you're also rolling yourself down from this little piece of fabric, sure, stronger than a curtain, but it's still a piece of fabric that you are only loosely tied into so that you can, you know, kick yourself into the splits or a big back bend and you're crawling up it and you're rolling down. Are you a little bit crazy?
Yes, absolutely. Who would do this willingly? Who would put themselves in dangerous positions just because? But it is not. So I feel that oftentimes, like, it comes across as very, like, precarious situations that you put yourself in, and it can be very dangerous. And that is why we always use like mats. I went through teacher training and they had me videotape my setup and they're like, we will accept you into our training if you buy a thicker mat, because mine were 2-inch and they're like, you need at least 4 to 8.
Okay.
And I was like, ooh, that is $500.
So, yeah. This is don't put a yoga mat under you. This is
yoga mats are for yoga.
Yeah.
But it's very much like logic too. So it is the building blocks of how can you like put yourself in these different situations of like knots. How can you wrap your feet in certain ways? How can you like wrap your body? And over time, it starts to make a lot more sense because there are patterns that you start to find. And so if you're somebody that gets really bored doing the same repetitive motions, fabrics, silks, aerial arts, and pole, like, they're all very similar in that you can add so much. Like, you can go so many different ways because you have not just the technicality, but also the artistic form of, like, how do I want to express myself today? How does this song make me feel? Like, what can I use with my fingertips, with my shoulders, with my free leg? How can I use even my sight to, like, guide my body? So it's very much of, like, a world of exploratory movement. That's and then you're really sweaty at the end, and you're like, wow. And then you're strong.
Yeah, you're very strong.
Thank you. It has been, so I've been training for, I want to say, almost six years now. So it's been almost 6 years. I started with pole dance, and in pole we start from the ground. So we start you with at least 1 foot on the ground. It is, I call it sneaky exercise because you're
it's
doing...
like playing.
Yeah, exactly. You're playing. Like, you're learning how to do spins. You're learning how to climb. And over time, those movements really develop, like, the smaller muscles in your body, like your rotator cuffs and your hip flexors, and they build you up to be able to do bigger movements, and also cleaner movements. So slowing everything down, finding a full straddle. And then it's just doing it so many times that your body does develop, like, strength over time. But it's not like I'm going to the gym and I'm going to, like, the gym is great too. Like, if that's your thing, that's amazing. My supervisor, he goes to the gym for 2 hours every day, and he cannot touch his hands behind his back. He would scratch his back by, like, rubbing it on, like, a piece of
real?
Metal. Like, he had the shop. Frank, I love you. So, yeah.
Wait, this was somebody who was teaching you how to do aerial dance?
No. So, this
Okay.
So, working as a welder, he's my supervisor. Yeah.
So, you are a welder besides?
So, I was, yes. I
was
a welder.
Okay.
Yes, as of 2 weeks ago, I quit my full-time welding job in the shop that I've been at for 6 years to pursue the art of FM aerial and movement arts. So.
Okay. Well, speaking of being fluid and being brave, you quit a full-time job.
It's terrifying. Yeah. People who own businesses are insane.
They're insane. Okay. How'd your business do during COVID?
So I wanted to close, if I'm to be totally honest.
Yeah.
I honestly thought I was going to shut it down. I had already made a plan of, like, where I was going to be, what I was going... I was still going to do aerial arts and pole, but I had a different mindset of, like, how to pursue that. My landlord is actually really kind and helpful, and thankfully I was working as a welder, and we were considered essential workers, so I was working full-time at the shop. So I was able to pay for both my, my living expenses and the business. So we lost... Yes, it hit us really hard, but not as hard as if we were in Minnesota. So it was, but also really scary when things opened up too, because we were like, we didn't know when it was going to happen. And then all of a sudden you're open and the landlord's like, aren't you happy? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I didn't have a plan. Not having a plan is really terrifying. So maybe.
What got you interested in welding?
Okay. Wow. This might be a really long story. Okay, so short story. money, because... Well, yes. So one word story, money. I needed money. I could not afford to go... I applied early decision to Mount Holyoke in the Eastern Coast, which was the first women's college in the USA. But I did not calculate the finances right, and so I ended up having to withdraw because even though they were giving me a lot of financial aid and grants, I could not take out loans and I didn't have the money to go to school. So my family sat me down and they're like, you can't go to this college. And it was already too late to apply to other places. So I withdrew my acceptance and I did a Google search and I was like, what has the highest placement rate with a living wage? And welding was, like, the first one. I was like, welding it is. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know that you had to plug stuff in and it used electricity. I started myself on fire, like, a full flames. But, I mean, I did it, had a full-time job, didn't sleep very much. Yep, got a job I mean, the week after I moved to Fargo and was working. I mean, yeah. I moved to Moorhead with my family and then was working in West Fargo.
Are there a lot of women in welding?
When I left, there were two other women on my shift, which is night shift. On days, there is, I want to say, one woman.
So out of how many people?
Out of many people. Many people. Okay. 30, 50.
Wow.
So, yeah, it is. There's not very many women. I mean, I think it's because maybe people are afraid to, like, take up welding.
Well, you did set yourself on fire.
Yeah. I still set myself on fire a few times.
A few times.
I definitely hurt myself a few times, almost squished myself like two or three times.
Uh-huh.
So, like, yes, it is dangerous. It can be dangerous.
Yeah. And you left that to go dance 20 feet in the air on fabric.
Yes.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, what? The danger factor.
What? You like adrenaline, huh?
I mean, I didn't think I did, but looking at my choices, I'm like, maybe.
Maybe this is a thing for you.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, in what ways are those two professions similar, besides maybe the rush?
Similar. I guess, honestly, welding is... It is an art form in the sense that you have to be very in tune with your body. Like, you actually do, because you have to be very in control of your breath. When you're welding, you have to be, like, control your inhale and exhales, because if you don't, your weld looks really wobbly. You have to be super controlled arm movements. You have to be able to be in a supported spot to be able to weld. Otherwise, if anything happens to your weld, you have to cut it out, and that really sucks. And I have asthma, so I really try not to cut stuff out. Maybe I should have done a Google search on what careers not to have when you have asthma. So.
Oh, I don't even know where to go from here.
My mom was really happy when I quit the welding. She was like, you won't have to go to the ER every year anymore.
Every year?
Just about, yeah. Okay. Honestly, I think it was welding, and I had too many hamsters, and they kind of overpowered me. So
I'm sorry, what did you just say?
I had too many hamsters. I had three hamsters, and that was too much for my immune system, I guess, like... My throat closed, and I had to drive myself to the ER. It was really sad. And then they were like cannibals, so they ate each other. So it was even worse.
Did I miss anything? This went a lot of directions. It's only been 15 minutes.
I feel like this is every single time I talk to anybody, there's so many tangents. So I guess something that is kind of interesting that I would like to kind of touch on is, so I guess two things. One of the things is, so I guess something that kind of sets our studio apart, or at least something that I'm really passionate about, is the idea of like, explorative movement, but also the idea of the art form. So when I think of aerial arts and pole dance and all of like the dancing aspect, it's not very, the focus is not to lose weight and it's not to be fit. So if that's like what the goal is, like it's not something that we talk about in the studio. So when you come to the studio, it's going to be very much like, what do you do? What are your interests? Like what kind of like makes you excited as a person, and then we're gonna do really hard like and then we're gonna leave feeling like really great. But it's very much about like being like, who is coming in the studio, because I'm really interested in like meeting people, because I think people have a lot of potential and are very interesting. Like, I'm so interested to see like the different personalities that come in, because we've been getting a lot of very assertive personalities recently that I'm like, this is very interesting. I'm like, I really like where this is going. So we'll do like short choreographies, and then people will add their own like flair to it, which is really cool to see. Because I don't want people to just be like robotic in the sense of like, show me how you do things, and I'm going to do them exactly the way that you teach me. It's more of like, okay, your body is safe, in the sense that like, your movements are coming from a place that you understand. So the way that you move your shoulders and your hips, everything is in alignment. But now you can take it a step further by adding your own, like, your own signature to it. So, like, how are you expressive? It's very expressive, and that's something that I really enjoy.
You know, a minute ago you used the word assertive. And I'm thinking back to the beginning of the conversation that you said you also are teaching a twerking class and teaching on pole. And these are types of dances that I think it's safe to say most of society looks down on. And I'm just curious, do you think that is something of just like, okay, it's not beautiful like ballet, or, you know, it's not respectable like ball dancing? Or do you think that it could have something to do with we still don't like female agency and females who are fine with their sexuality and putting out whatever they want?
Yes, I have so many thoughts. Yes, it is, because there's definitely a stigma, or especially like around pole, because that's what I started with. And then there was this whole thing of like hashtag not a stripper, where people were distinguishing themselves. They're like, no, this is pole fitness. It's not what they do in the club. And so I think this kind of stems from like society and society's like view on women, and also like using shame as a tactic to like control like women's actions. And so I find that surrounding topics of like body is very, it's very sensitive, because it's something that's not very open. And so when you come into a pole class, like, you have to wear shorts and like basically like a sports bra, because you're not going to be able to stick on the pole. It's going to be very frustrating, because the fabric just makes it so much harder. You need the friction of your skin. And also with like twerking, like, you have to wear loose shorts, because otherwise your butt doesn't move, and so you can't get the movements down. But also being able to like go through these movements and be like, okay, so this is how this is how my body is. I getting in tune with the way that your body looks, and also an awareness and then an appreciation of like, it's okay. Like, I am okay, and it's okay to be a sexual person. Like, yes, it is, an asexual person. It's not something that we talk about like outright. It's not like, okay, today we have a seminar on our sexuality. but it kind of, it's underneath, because it is, what you're wearing kind of comes up these ideas of like, am I comfortable with my body? And unfortunately, I see there's a lot of people that are not. And this is why, as a studio owner, like, I try to make the space more receptive to people that are maybe not super confident yet, but will get there. Because I've definitely seen the transformation of people coming in and being like, very like, I'm going to wear yoga pants, a tank top, and extra, so many layers, and like biker shorts. And then seeing them like really come into like being like, no, I'm okay, because I know that I need this. It's not about how my body looks. It's about like what my body can do, and my body is really strong now. And then they take that confidence and they put it to work at like at work or in their relationships, and they're like, I feel much better in my own skin. And I think that's really cool. So at the studio, if you come to the studio for pole, like, the lights are dim, we have like black lights, and it's very much the focus is on like your movement versus like how you look. Like, it's about what's inside. Yes.
Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. I really appreciate you.
That was Yvette Reyes, the owner and studio director at FM Aerial and Movement Arts. You can find out more at fmaerial.com. That's it for Main Street Weekend. Coming up Monday, an effort to help native speakers of dying languages get in the classrooms faster. Until then, enjoy the rest of your weekend.